Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next couple hours, if you want to talk cars, now's the time to get in. The lines get kind of busy sometimes. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We can talk about anything car-related you want. Many times the phone calls hinge around, I took my car in for an oil change, and they said I needed this and this and this. And correctly, we should talk about symptoms related to the additional funds needed to put your car back together. So if there's an issue, there should be symptoms, and they may say, well, have you noticed that when you let go of the steering wheel, the car is pulling to the right? Yes, I have. Have you noticed that happens on the freeway and the straight roads and on the city streets that are a little bit crowned? Yes, it is. Or something like, did you notice that you're adding power steering to it on a regular basis? Yes, I am. Okay, well, we've identified the leak, and here is the repair. Here is the estimate. And that total ticket is $412. Does it have the hose? Yes. Does it have fluid? Yes. Does it have the labor? Yes. Does it have shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax? No. Okay, well, all that's going to be another 10 to 15 to 20% depending on how their algorithm goes in their software. But those are the kinds of things that we can help you with. I don't have an axe to grind. We're not going to badmouth anybody, and you're not allowed to badmouth anybody. So if you call in and you talk about a shop you're having a problem with, you're not allowed to say the name of the shop. Don't. Because if you do, you're going to hear a dial tone because Gil's going to hang up on you, and we're going to go to the next caller. So it's pretty simple. It's all about cars, 602-508-0960. I've been in the valley, well, I was born and raised in southern Arizona, and that's a hell of a long time ago, more than 60 years ago. And I've been in the auto repair industry, and I started at a gas station at Broadway and Priest in Tempe in 1969. It was 69 or 70. I don't remember when I was a sophomore in high school. And then at that point, we morphed into our own repair shop and then another larger location and then where we're at today. This isn't about my store. This isn't about my shop. This is about your car, your problems, stuff like that. So, 602-508-0960. A lady came in the other day, and she had a 2000 Toyota RAV4, and she had an estimate from somebody else, and she says, would you look at my brakes? They're making noise and crunching, and the quote on it was $28 checkout. That was from us. They actually had a $500 estimate from the other shop, to fix the brake noise. In our bill, and there's a lot of shops out there that play on both ends of the spectrum. There's lots of other shops that would have done exactly the same I would do. Check brakes and advise lube the left rear caliper slide, $25. So basically, we fixed the problem for $25. They had a $500 estimate on it, and they said this is the explanation that's written on the work order. We were told to check the brakes. They were making noise. We test drove the vehicle and duplicated the noise. Folks, that is so important. We have to duplicate the problem in order to find it and fix it. Continuing on, the creaky noise we're hearing sounds like it's coming from this front suspension. It's probably the front struts or control arms, but we don't see any issues with these components at this time. We inspected the brakes and found the brake pads are at 12:30 seconds and the rears are at 10:30 seconds. Folks, that's about 50% gone. So we still have half the life left. That's what that means in lingo from what we're used to. Brake pad replacement is typically at 3:30 seconds or less. So this customer has 9 to 7:30 seconds left. We found the left rear caliper wasn't moving as freely as the others. We removed the left rear caliper. We lubed the slide pins, and now the caliper goes to the left and to the right. The brakes are good at this time, and we have no further recommendations. And then we did check your car over like you asked us to, and we found the cabin filter. It's really dirty, and you authorized us to replace that. We always give you the old cabin filter back so that you can see the trash that we find in it and that you know that it's bad and it's going to fit your car. So yeah, there's a possibility we could save up a bunch of cabin filters, but, and then tell you this came out of your car, But in reality, that's how you're going to get caught by the cops and by the Attorney General's office, because there are hundreds of cabin filters, and they're all different sizes, and they're all different, I mean, pleats and horizontals and verticals, all kinds of stuff. So it's going to be kind of tough if you're going to do that. You better have something that looks like what you put in. We found the left rear caliper wasn't moving. We pulled the caliper. We lubed the slides. We did the oil change. We changed or checked all your belts and hoses. We recommended the cabin filter. We found the radiator hoses to be original. If the radiator hoses haven't been replaced within the last eight years and 80,000 miles, we recommend you doing those before next summer. And then the estimate to replace the upper and lower hoses and new clamps and so forth and so on, and to flush the cooling system, the customer declined, which is fine, but at least they have it in writing what we're going to charge them and what we're going to do. And then they had a low-pressure tire warning light blinking, and the system needs to be diagnosed because the tires are aired up and there are no nails in the tires. So the low-pressure tire blinking system means one of the transmitters inside one of the tires is bad, or it needs a battery or something. Maybe it's full of water. We don't know. The fact of the matter is in order to duplicate it, you've got to go in there and hook up equipment to talk to each one of the wheel sensors. Then when you identify which wheel is talking, yakking at you, or not yakking at you, then you have to take the tire and wheel off the car, put it on the tire machine, take it apart, put a new sensor or put a new battery or whatever needs to be done. And so there is a little bit of work when you fix those kinds of problems. We found the hoses are original, and the low pressure light is blinking, and the estimate to diagnose the system was between 79 and 159. The reason why it's so wide is it can be something pretty easy and it can be something pretty technical. For instance, we may have lost one of the four channels that the computer's looking for, which means we have to go in and refresh the computer's data. We have to go in and do a review, a revisit, a reload. We have to start all over again. So it can get kind of ugly, but you got to give them the window. And anyway, at the end of the day, the customer spent $185.88, and we were working against a $500 estimate. And so there's lots of shops out there. If you want to find a shop in your geographical area, go to marksalem.com and click on the best car repair shops list. I have lots of shops in the valley that I refer people to, because I don't think I want to be responsible for as many cars as possible that would come to our shop. But there's other guys out there that I know, that I've known for 20, 30, 40 years. They're honest. They're dependable. They know how to fix cars. Many of them own their own buildings and their land, so they're not out there leveraged to the moon from the bank, and that they have to really enhance the average ticket price in order to make their rent. That's a common denominator with some of the newer shops and the chains that move into the Phoenix area is debt service. They've got a lot of debt service, and their prices reflect the servicing of their debts, their debt. So that's kind of how it works. A good shop in town is Action Auto Repair. He's up at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. And no matter what kind of workmanship you need, what kind of repairs you need, just talk to them, and they'll tell you if they're the best shop, and if not, they'll send you to somebody who is. But most of these guys are in the 90 percentile range. They can handle 90% of your car's problems. The 10% is we need a specific shop, like an alignment, a frame shop that's going to be able to straighten up your frame, because the alignment shows good, but in reality the back's not following the front. So we got to figure out where the problem lies, and more than likely somebody kissed a curb. So Action Auto Repairs, I-17 in Deer Valley, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Okay, all right, I just lost programming for a second tonight, and that's how it works. So anyway, the phone number is 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem, or if you have an argument in your house and you need somebody to settle it, or if you want to hear both sides, both answers, you can do that as well. 602-508-0960. When it comes to car repair, I want to caution you, because right now it's the Wild West in the car repair industry. Right now, prices are going through the roof. There's a couple of groups that are buying auto repair shops and tire stores up. And when they do that, they raise the prices. And of course, if you're a shop around the corner from one of those that just got bought, you monitor their pricing structure. And if their pricing structure goes from, let's say, $120 an hour to $150 an hour, then you might tuck yourself in behind at $150, at $140, and move up with them. And so, and then as far as parts are concerned, it's always been a wild west out there between what we buy and what we sell them for. But the idea is that as far back as 1970s, it was something that was a 30 or 40% markup. So it wasn't anything significant. Today, we're seeing one times cost, two times cost, and three times cost as the customer's cost. And there's nothing really you can do about it, but the shop is going to say, and rightfully so, the parts, I have to warranty the part, and that means if you come back in and the alternator fails, I have to do it all over again. So there has to be enough warranty money to pay at least the technician and for the next alternator that I have to put on your car. So there are some costs associated with that, so there's going to be charges associated with that, but typically they're internal, and the customer's not. You know, if you bring your alternator back to us, you're going to get your car back with a new alternator. You're not going to pay anything. But the idea is that we still have to pay for the alternator's failure. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And it's difficult to find a good shop, but I would suggest that you be careful and you watch out for this kind of a shop. You take your car in and the synthetic oil change in your neighborhood or your geographical area, or historically your synthetic oil change costs you between $75 and $100. Then all of a sudden you have a shop that comes into town and they have a $39.95 special. The $39.95 doesn't even cover the cost of the oil and the filter. But it's a draw and it's a hook. So when you go in, it's likely, not and probable, but certainly not certain, likely and probable that they're going to go through your car with a fine-tooth comb and tell you you need lots of work and give you the supporting documentation and pricing associated with that. That's okay. That's okay. That's just a loss leader. We do oil changes cheap to bring you in so we can sell you something. But if you remember anything I say to you, I want to tell you your owner's manual is written for your car. And what happens is you're told that you need an oil change every 3,000 miles when you're using a synthetic oil. And your owner's manual actually calls for an 8, 10, or 12,000 mile interval. And then when you bring that to the shop's attention, some shops will say, well, that isn't written for Arizona. Your owner's manual is not written for Arizona, and that, folks, is just a lie, because we don't have a New Mexico owner's manual for your Toyota or a Chevrolet or your Chevrolet. We don't have the owner's manual is written for the car in every environment it's likely to be sold and driven. From Alaska to Hawaii, from New Hampshire to San Diego, everything in between, and even offshore and through Canada. So when someone says you're owner's manual is not written for Arizona, you need to run away, because that's not true and it's never been. If it says in there that your owner's manual says you should service your transmission every 30,000 miles, then that's what it means. But if it says it's at 100,000 miles and they try to sell you a transmission service, which can cost anywhere between as little as $200 upwards to $450 or $500, depending on the fluid and the filter, that happens, then all of a sudden you've done it too early. And maybe you feel bad about that, or maybe you lose confidence in the shop, which I wouldn't blame you. But that's how it happens. That's how it works. It works in that kind of environment. So when you're told that you need something like belts and hoses and stuff, then just get your owner's manual out, step aside, go outside, get your owner's manual out of your car, or do it at home and look at it and see what it says with respect to hoses and belts. My personal in Phoenix is somewhere between 75 and 100,000 miles. But many of the manuals are going to say north of 100,000 miles, maybe 125. So if you want to take the sweet spot, take 100,000 miles. Some of the cars are going to be below it. Some of the cars are going to be above it. And certainly we, as guys that work on cars, we can't possibly know every single car there is. Every single car there is. But historically speaking, they're all going to be pretty doggone close. In the old days, everything was centered around the oil change at 3,000 miles. And then we went to a 5,000-mile oil change because we upgraded the oil. And then we went to a synthetic and a semi-synthetic. And today your oil change can easily cost you $100 plus or minus $25. The oil is more expensive. The filters haven't really changed that much, but they've gone up just because of inflation. and so forth and so on. So there is some pricing issues that we have now that we didn't have before, but we also have the same small group of auto repair shops that are taking advantage of the pricing issues and going crazy. So you have to be aware of that. But again, if you want to go to marksalem.com, you can. You look at, click on the best car repair shops, find one that's close to your geographical location. And that's one that I know the owner. That's one that plays by the rules. That's the guy that doesn't have, he isn't in debt up to his ears. He doesn't have three mortgages on his repair shop. He owns cars, and chances are his car that he drives and his wife drive, we were talking about this the other day, is 10 years or more older. And so we were all laughing because one guy had a new truck and everybody else, like my truck, is a 2012. That's what I drive. So what is it, 10 years old? Yeah, that's all. And my wife just bought a 2015 Explorer, but it's a 2015. And she got rid of her Dodge Edge, or not, her Ford Edge, that had 150,000 miles on it. Well, we had serviced it and it was good, but the difference between the Edge cargo capability and the difference in the Explorer cargo capability was significant. And she wanted more floor space behind the driver's seat for the stuff that she buys and sells. So that's kind of how we ended up where we were at. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, I'm just going to check with you. You still have me and we're on the air and the lines are open.
And the lines are open.
Okay. All right, I'll just do that every once in a while. I'll go, check, check, Gil, how we doing? You just say, we're on the air, and you just keep talking. So another thing, too, is we have issues with tires and inflation, and so I'll cover that real quick for you. There are a variety of places you can find what the air pressure should be on your car. You're probably going to find one number in the owner's manual. You're probably going to find one number on the tire, and then there's people that split the difference between the two. I agree with all of them. All of them. You can use the one on the tire, which is the tire says, if you want this tire to carry 3,000 pounds, because it's a 3,000-pound tire, I need you to put 45 pounds of pressure in it. Okay. 45 isn't acceptable. It's going to grow to 50 and 55 in the middle of the summertime as you head across I-10 heading towards the Colorado River. It's going to get hotter. It's okay. The tire can handle it. Now, maybe you don't like the stiffer ride. Maybe you can't tell the difference, and most people can't tell the difference. But if you can, you can soften it up to what the sticker says on the door of your car. So the tire may have a maximum inflation of 45, but the sticker on the car says 38 PSI. Why is there a difference? Okay, the one on the car says at 38 PSI, the tire has enough air to handle the load of all Mark's golf buddies, four guys and four sets of clubs. So in that vehicle, maximum front axle's 3,000 pounds and maximum rear axle's 3,000 pounds. There's two tires on each axle, so each tire has to carry 1,500 pounds. So in order to have that tire carry 1,500 pounds, you need 36 pounds of air pressure. Now, the tire may have a maximum of 40. You can go to 40 if you want. It's going to roughen up the ride, maybe slightly noticeable. The tire will be running a little cooler and not so hot. And in Arizona, I think that's important. So you can kind of play with but you don't want to go below the tire's number, and you don't want to go above the sticker on your door. So those are the two parameters that you need to stay in between. What do I do? I run everything at maximum inflation. Everything we own, all of our cars, all of our rental cars, all the cars we own, all the trucks we own, everything I run at maximum, and I'll tell you why. A tire that's running its maximum inflation, like on some of our horse trailers and our big trucks and motorhomes, it's 120 pounds. Okay, I'm putting 120 pounds. I know it's going to go to 130 when the tire gets hot. I don't care. It's okay. But here's the deal. Remember riding your bicycle to the gas station with a flat tire or a tire almost flat? Remember how much effort it took? This is an exaggerated example. Bear with me. It took a lot of effort to pedal the bicycle. But then when you got to the gas station, you aired up the front, you aired up the back, and on your way home, it was like driving a Corvette. Well, that's the same way with my truck. My truck has six tires on it. It's a one-ton Dodge. I run all the tires at maximum inflation. Yes, the ride's a little harsh. I don't care about the ride. I turn the stereo up. I don't have to listen to the ride. I don't have to feel the ride. I don't care. But If I hit a curb, I'm going to bounce off the curb. I like that. If I go through a pothole, I'm going to bounce through the pothole. I'm not going to cut the tire up. And it's going to be the truck likes it better because the tires are all inflated and it's easier to move that big dog down the street. So for me, I get better fuel economy. I get better tire wear. My tires run at least 20 degrees cooler or more in the summertime than they would at the other inflation. Now, the tires are 110, but the sticker on the tire, the tire says 110, but the sticker on the door says 86. So I can do either one, but I like the 110. I like that. That's how it works. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here from 10 o'clock till noon talking about cars and car repair issues. And if you'd like to join us, it's easy. 602-508-0960. We're having technical problems and hopefully they don't extend to you, but 602-508-0960 would be a good test. We'd like you to try it. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock and everything. We've got our stuff together and you do too, and we're going straight to the phones. Vince, thank you for holding. The rest of you, I'm getting to you as quickly as I can, but Vince, you're first. What can I do for you?
Mark, I'm an old guy, and I have collector cars, and I just had a fuel pump problem in one of them, and they had it's an 84, and now all of a sudden the fuel pump is not in the engine compartment. It was in the fuel tank. Can you tell me what the logic was of doing something like that?
Oh yeah, it's easy. First of all, the electric fuel pump is in the tank because number one, it's cooled and lubricated by the gasoline it sits in, and so it never gets hot. It never overloads, and it has a constant source of fuel to it. And so they put it in. Plus, the fuel injection demands a much higher pressure. In the old days of the fuel pump being, you know, attached to the motor or underneath the car or something, typically the carburetor would handle between 3 and 4 and 5 pounds of pressure. And otherwise, we'd overcome the needle and seat and flood the carburetor. But in the newer model cars, we're running fuel pressures anywhere between 40 and 80 pounds. So it's a good idea, and frankly, most fuel pumps last 3 times the life of the old dogs that we had in the 70s and 80s and 90s. So it's a good thing.
Well, you're right on that, because that's an 84, and this is the first time I had to change a fuel pump on it. So I guess I got my money's worth out of it.
Yeah,
but it was just a shock to find out that they had to drop the tank. And what? What's going on? You know?
Yeah, yep, you're right, you're right. All right, well, thank you, Vince. You bring up a good point. I appreciate it.
I have one more question for you, if you can. I've got these old collector cars, and I try to drive them about once a week or so, maybe about 10 or 12 miles. Is that okay to just keep them going, or is there? I've heard you mention sometimes you got to get the oil pressure up, and I don't know that I get it up high enough, and you know, only by driving that 10 miles, and I really very rarely go on the freeways. You got some suggestions on that?
Yeah, first of all, it's not the oil I'm worried about. It's the cooling system. I want the cooling system to reach half to three quarters on your gauge. I want a heat cycle. It's called a heat cycle. We need to go from stone cold to the hottest possible back to stone cold. That's called a heat cycle. So on all my old cars, I hop in them. I just drive them until I get that temperature gauge as high as I can, or if it's a digital reading, I want to be in the 215, 220 range. And here's why. Every time you shut the car off, and you're building a lot of water inside your engine right now the way you're doing it, because you never get the water to boil out. 212, water turns from a liquid to a vapor. That's why we want all the newer model cars to run 220, including your old ones. They can handle it, but that's just something that us old guys have a tough time with. But I want my car to get up over 220. I want that water to turn to a vapor. The PCV valve sucks it out of the engine, sends it down the tailpipe, and voila, my motor's happy. So that's kind of how we work. Good luck to you, Vince. And if you want to continue this conversation with me at a later date, then mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. Harold, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark. My question is used cars. I plan to buy a used car in a couple months for one of my relatives. And on the morning car show on your station, I think it's run by a Mr. Green, who purports to help you purchase cars. He quoted a statistic which I find almost unbelievable. He claims that because of the storms back east, the hurricanes and whatever, there are going to be about 200,000 vehicles that have been flood damaged appear on car markets around the country. How concerned should we be here in Arizona about buying one of these flood damaged vehicles?
Well, I agree with what he said. I can't really agree with the numbers, but I agree that, yes, this happens a lot. It just doesn't happen on the East Coast or the West Coast. Your car is in Florida. We had a hurricane. It's full of water. State Farm, Allstate, Farmers, whoever, they have your car. They're going to go and they're going to sell the car to a reseller. He's going to sell it to somebody. They're going to take it apart, hopefully, and they're going to get it running. They're going to change all the fluids. They're going to clean out all the mud inside the car. They're going to put it back on the road, and they may sell it. That's just a fact of life. But how do I find out? I can tell you this much. A used car checkover is the answer to your question. The used car checkover, and you tell them, make sure it's not a flood car. I'll get underneath the dashboard with a flashlight, and in 10 seconds, I'll tell you if that car's been in the water. In 10 seconds. There's no way they're going to wash the top of the dashboard underneath the dash pad. There's no way they're going to wash behind the glove box. There's no way they're going to get all the dirt out of the crevices in the trunk because this thing has been in a flood. And the flood comes with dirty, stinky water with a whole bunch of dirt in it. The water leaks out. The dirt stays. So there's no way I'm going to miss that, and I'm just as good and at least as good as all the guys out there. So when you buy a used car and you're worried about it being a flood vehicle, then do a used car checkover. Most shops are going to be between $100 and $150. They're going to tell you what's wrong with the car. They're going to give you an estimate for the repair of the car, and you'll have that to work with. Maybe you go back to where you bought it and ask them if they'll take care of these three small items. But as far as flood cars concerned, and then let me tell you, we do 30, 40 cars a day. We have 20 bays in our facility. We do lots of used car checkovers. We might see a flood car two or three times a year. Two or three times a year, that's nothing. But we do lots of used car checkovers. So customer wants to buy a car for their 16-year-old son. They buy a car. Before they buy it, they bring it to us. We look at it. We say, perfect. He says, is it a flood car? Nope, it isn't. Okay, thank you. And that's the way it is. Another thing you can do is you can go on the VIN, and you can go to Carfax and do a Carfax on the VIN, and that'll tell you that this was born in Florida. It was then obtained by the company insurance company. It was then sold to ABC Auto, and ABC sold it to FYG Auto, and then it was sold to a reseller in Phoenix, and then the Phoenix sold it to a guy named Mark Salem. So you can Carfax it and figure out that the car is a flood car as well. Got to run, but thank you very much, Harold. That's a great question. Chip and Steve, please stay there. I'll be back in about, I think, 3 or 4 minutes. When it comes to diesel work, I strongly suggest you consider Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Nate's up at Pinnacle Peak in the I-17, and when it comes to Chevy, Dodge, and Fords, and if it comes to talking about fixing them and knowing the symptoms and being able to make an educated guess, he's not going to fix it for you over the phone, then you really need to give Nick or Nate a call at Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And again, that's I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Chip, thank you for holding. How can I help you? Steve, I'm sorry. Steve, go ahead.
Yes, in regards to the heat cycle, burning off the water and the oil, how about water condensation in a fuel tank? And I've never heard of any problems, but how does that accounted for?
It's not. We're going to suck the vapors off the tank, and we're going to run them through a filter, a canister filter, and then we're going to reintroduce them to the engine. If there's any moisture in the vapor on the tank, we don't care. It's going to go into the engine, and we're going to suck it. We're going to suck it through the evaporative system. We take the fumes from the tank and we recycle them to the engine. We move them forward and then reintroduce them to the engine. Your moisture comes with the fuel.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And did I handle Chip or did he have to go? Okay, Chip, go ahead. I'm sorry, Chip. Go right ahead.
Yeah. Hey. No problem. Good morning.
Good morning.
My wife's got a 2016 Kia Soul that I just put new tires on all the way around. Expensive tires, Michelins, I like her to ride on the best. So I need to get an alignment or at least have it checked. And I don't want to just take it any old shop for an alignment because there is a certain amount of skill required to do those correctly. I live in the Gilbert area, near relatively near downtown Gilbert, but my office is actually down kind of near your shop. I work near Kyrene and Chandler Boulevard. So was looking for a reference on a good shop to get the alignment checked and done if needed.
Okay, okay. Let me ask you a couple questions. Was there any abnormal wear on the tires you took off?
Not really, no.
Okay. Now, it's normal for the front tires to have some outside edge wear. It's normal for the front tires to have some outside edge wear because they kind of lean over as we turn left and right. As we rotate those tires under the best of conditions, we're going to end up with all four tires have a little bit of obvious outside wear. Did you have that?
Yes, and I'm good about doing the rotation. I'm a big fan of discount tire, and I take advantage of their rotation program.
All right. Well, I wouldn't do anything if I were you. I wouldn't even align your car.
Okay.
There's no reason to. It's not pulling left or right, or you'd have said that. And it's got outside edge wear all the way around on all four tires, and that's completely normal. And if you go down the road and the road is obviously crowned and it's got a slight drift to the right, then the crowned road and the slight drift to the right go hand in hand like peanut butter and jelly. If you're on the freeway, we typically have a good flat freeway, and if you take your hands off and it'll stay in the road, then what am I aligning it for?
Okay, it makes sense.
I don't want to.
I've just heard that, hey, you put new tires on, get your alignment checked. So
that's
may
not
or may
true.
Not be necessary. Okay.
No, I probably sell 25, 30 tires a day, which is about 1 hour at the discount tire, but I also work as an expert for discount tire, and so I have access to their legal team and a lot of other stuff. But I'm telling you, whoever told you that when you have a new set of tires that you should get an alignment probably owns an alignment shop. And that's a little self-serving for me. You ask my opinion, I gave it to you. Don't even bring it to me. I don't care, because if I regurgitated to you is correct, I'm not going to align it. I'm just not going to align it. Now, wait, there is one thing. Now, this is between you and me. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Has your wife gained more than 100 pounds since the last time the tires were put on? Or wait a minute. Let me clean it up. Have you gained 100 pounds since the last time it had to? Because if the driver is a very, I'm going to clean this up. If the driver's a real big man, then we're going to align it with him in it. We're going to tell him. We're going to align it with him in it, because we'll set it up to 110-pound beauty queen, your wife, and then all of a sudden this 280-pound guy gets inside there, and he complains it pulls to the left. Well, no kidding it pulls to the left. So, all right, I'm not going to get in any more trouble, so I'm going to say goodbye to you.
Thank you, sir.
All righty. Harry, you're up next. Harry, how are you doing?
Fine, how are you? And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
And to you too, Harry. Thank you for that.
I hope your Secret Santa is doing well. I think it's a very good program.
Well, now that you opened the door for me, folks, we have a Secret Santa Club that we've been doing, I think, for 20 years. My wife and my daughter take cash donations. We go to group homes. We go to rest homes. We go to a lot of different places, and that 100% of that money, and I match the highest amount. So some of my buddies will oftentimes put in $1,000 or $2,000, which means I do too. But we raise lots of money. We buy lots of stuff, and everybody gets a pack of stuff that they need. So we do homeless people. We do kids in group homes. We do kids in foster homes. We do elderly people. We do lots. And we use the social services to help us with this. And I think 1 year we did, I don't know, I think we gave away over 100 turkeys 1 year. So that's what Harry's talking about, is the Secret Santa Club. And if you want to be a part of it, mark at marksalem.com is the way to do it. But, Harry, are you in trouble again?
Always in trouble.
Okay. So what's on your mind?
Like you, I mean, you know, it seems like every time I turn around.
I understand.
Hey, you were talking about how some of the shops will, you know, tell you on oil changes and different things like that, that, you know, you're in Arizona now, so it's, you know, all bets are off. Well, I think they kind of cover that by saying, well, Arizona is a severe duty, you know, deal on your car and stuff. It's just a lot harder because of the heat and stuff. And I think that's how they kind of cover their tails on that a little bit. So
I agree with you. I agree with you. In some of the owner's manuals, there is a severe service. And I agree that Arizona typically is the severe service, but it's not for Grandma and Grandpa Moses, who drive 4,000 miles a year, and they go to church and the liquor store and visit the grandkids every once in a while. That is not severe service. It may be severe weather, but it's not severe service. Severe service is guys like you hauling your trailer to Wyoming and Idaho and all that kind of stuff, and running and gunning with the big trucks and doing 70, 80, 90 miles an hour. Now I'm teasing you. You know I'm teasing. And the oil temperature is running about 230, 240, and the engine temperature is up there about 240, 250. Your foot's on the floor. Your wife's yelling at you. That's severe service. Okay, there's a
I may drive fast, but I don't think I've ever passed you on the road going to Payson or parts north. So.
But I'm as guilty as you are. When I'm hauling horses and stuff, I want to do the speed limit. And I'm running it a little hot, and I'm running a little hot on the throttle and hot on the engine temperature, hot on the oil temperature, hot on the transmission. I'm running it hot, but I don't think it should be in the right lane at 45 miles an hour with my hazards on. I'm capable of doing 65 with a horse trailer with four horses. I'm okay, and I got good brakes and all that jazz. So anyway, Harry, thank you very much. Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange is a guy, Phil, who knows more about transmissions than I've ever known about cars in my life. He has been around since Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble bought their first car and had that rock transmission in there, and he knows how they've translated till now. Here's the deal. Back then, we used to shift the transmission with throttle and vacuum, engine vacuum. We shifted that. Today we use a computer, and the computer looks at the speed of the car, the speed of the engine. It looks on whether it, and the computer knows if you're going uphill or if you're going downhill. The computer knows if your air conditioning is on or off. The computer knows how many butts are in the seats in your cars and your trucks. It knows all that. So the computer shifts. But you know what? The way it shifts you from 1 to 2 is the same way we used to shift you from 1 to 2 in the 60s and the 70s. That's the way it was. So when it comes to transmissions, the only shop I can possibly tell you to go to is Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. And, Gil, you have a caller.
Yes, we do. Say hello to Larry.
Larry, good morning.
Hey, good morning, sir. Thanks for taking my call. The reason for my call, I love Toyota, and I love the more expensive one. But it comes, unfortunately, with a moon roof, which I can't stand. So it looks like I'm stuck with the four-cylinder, from what I'm told. Can you give me your observations on what your thoughts, the pro and con on four-cylinders are? I've always been against them. I've always been a six-cylinder person.
Okay. I want to tell you, I want you to think about this. In the days of old, when we had, 283 engines, 265s, we had 305s on the Chevrolet side, we had 302s on the Chevrolet, those are V8s, and then we had some smaller six cylinders. In those days, those six cylinder motors used to have, 70, 80 horsepower. It's not uncommon for a four cylinder motor today to have twice that much horsepower. It's the four cylinder, there's no wrap on the four cylinder if it serves your needs. You're not going to haul your two axle boat with a four cylinder. That's not going to happen. You're not going to put four big guys in the car and drive to Flagstaff to play golf with four bags in the trunk. You're going to be a little bit inhibited. But I want to tell you, my daughter has a four cylinder. My mother, before she passed away, drove a four cylinder. And if you buy a four-cylinder turbo, or if you buy a four-cylinder enhanced, something with direct ignition and direct injection and fancied up, those things, it's not uncommon for those four cylinders to have a horsepower and torque rating of a V8 in the 70s. So I'm not against four cylinders. I don't know why people would want one, because a V6 is two more cylinders and has an obvious amount of horsepower, torque, and speed and so forth. But by the same token, there's a lot of people that matches their driving habits just fine. They go from their house to work and work back, and they don't go to Flagstaff. But even if you do go to Flagstaff, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. So I don't have any heartburn with the four-cylinder. I think they're just as dependable as the six, and in certain applications, they're pretty tough. They're pretty comparable to the sixes. So I'm not really worried about it.
And the lifetime of them, they're pretty much the same?
Well, I can tell you something. The answer is hell yes. And I'll tell you, let me put a caveat to that. Every motor that we have to fix has been the damage has been caused by the nut behind the wheel.
Okay.
Every motor. It's been years since somebody brought in an engine that was puffing smoke out the tailpipe. It had so much blow by it. It had blown all the vents off the valve covers. It was just an old, worn-out motor. Every motor we fix has been overheated or run low on oil or damaged by the driver. So it's been a long time. And I want to tell you something. My wife's little Ford Edge had 146,000 miles. We just sold that. My truck has 166,000 miles. I think all the cars in my family fleet are north of 125,000 miles. They don't leak oil. They don't burn oil. They're serviced on a regular basis and so forth and so on. So it's just different today. I have no problems with the four-cylinder, whether it's got a rubber timing belt or whether it's got a chain. It doesn't make any difference. I think the four-cylinder is applicable for at least a third of the people that need cars. That's my opinion.
Okay. And one supplemental question. Your earlier guest was talking about the flood damage and so on. Is there any concern buying a new car? I mean, the dealers, they couldn't clean up a car enough and then sell it as new. I mean, have you seen that as any kind of a threat to a purchaser like I am?
No, not at all. Because to be honest with you, I don't know what our labor rate is. Let's pretend it's $150 an hour. If I'm going to say to the technician, take the front seat out and the rear seat out, dust them all off with air, get all the dirt and the mud out of them, clean them up. On the bottom side, I want you to hose them down with a little bit of water. I want you to clean them up, set them over here. I want you to pull the carpet. I want you to get all that water out of there, all that mud out of there. I want you to do the same in the trunk, and then I want you to open up the hood, and I want you to steam clean that thing top and bottom. And while you're there, I want you to disconnect the battery, take the garden hose, and clean the inside of the dash from underneath on the floorboard. Take the nozzle in your hand, and can that be done? Yes. Is it being done? Yes. But they still aren't going to get you if you have a flashlight in the mirror and you're going to look on top of the instrument panel. You're going to look on top of the evaporator case where they just can't get all that mud off. So we're smarter than they give us credit, but no one's going to spend that kind of money to hide the flood damage.
Got you. Which car did your daughter get, if you don't mind my asking? LE, XP, or SE? Did she get the SE?
You know, I don't. I can tell you, Alan drives my son, and I'm not quite sure he's my son because he drives a Ford, and I don't understand that, but he does. But he also has an Excursion, and I have an Excursion. My wife drives a Ford Explorer. My daughter drives a Ford Explorer, and they're both six cylinders. My daughter Allison also drives a six cylinder, but Alan and I usually are driving the diesels and the big V8s. And so we like the power and fuel and stuff like that. But we are a Ford family, and we are a Chevrolet and a GM family. And now we're a Dodge family because Alan and I both own Dodge trucks with diesels in them. I haul, and he does too. So, yeah, our family's just pretty. And then we have a motorhome with a Freightliner chassis, if that makes any difference. Anyway, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a few minutes talking about cars, but the lines are wide open. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back to the show. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we're going to be here for an hour talking about cars. If you'd like to join us, I have four lines open. Don has got one of them right now, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Got four open lines available. When folks call me or email me, they usually ask me for a good shop in a geographical area. But in Sun City, it's easy. One shop, Automotive Dynamics. Been around since 1982. I've known Chuck since the late 60s. Their staff and technicians, they know what they're doing. They know how to diagnose. They know how to fix. They know how to bid it. They don't sell unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're looking for a good shop in Sun City, Automotive Dynamics is on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Don, good morning to you.
How are you doing this morning?
All right, I'm good. All right. Thank you for asking. Yes.
a week or two ago, you had the guy on with you from Strictly Diesel.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to get through to you guys then, but I couldn't. But my question is Ram put a 12-valve diesel engine in a 2500 truck. I think it ran from 91.5 to 93.5. One of them had, I think they started off with a four-cylinder fuel pump, then they went to a six-cylinder fuel pump. If I was going to go looking for one, should I be looking for the six-cylinder fuel pump?
I'm not familiar, and I've not heard what you're talking about.
It's a 12-valve diesel.
I know what a 12-valve diesel is, but I'm not hearing this four-cylinder fuel pump and six-cylinder fuel pump. I've never heard that before. I've never had deal with that before.
When I was doing my research, it popped up. So they had one cylinder for each. I mean, one cylinder in the fuel pump for each cylinder in the engine.
Okay, I don't know anything about that at all. I've never heard of this. I think what you can do is you can call Nate and talk to him quickly. He's at Strictly Diesel. He takes phone calls, and you can say this is a radio question, and you can ask him about this situation that you're talking about, a four-cylinder and a six-cylinder fuel pump. The fuel pumps on today's cars are pretty high performance, but we're still seeing a difference with respect to the part number of a four-cylinder or a six-cylinder or a V8 or a big 6.7 Ford or a 6-liter Ford, all that kind of stuff. We're still seeing some part number differences, so we aren't seeing a universal pump. But I've never fixed a vehicle, and I said to the customer, you had a four-cylinder pump, and I put a six-cylinder pump. I've never had that. But I want to tell you, Nate will take your call. And I would avoid Monday mornings because it's busy for us on Monday mornings. But he'll talk to you and he'll call you back. He always does. So ask Nate. He'd be the best guy to handle that. But, Don, that's the best I can do. 602-508-0960. We have five lines open if you have a car question or a car problem. 602-508-0960. When it comes to car and car repair, I use examples from my own family to give you, I hope it gives you confidence, and I hope it gives you comfort on how you're servicing your car. For instance, my wife drives her Ford Explorer up and down from Payson to Chandler a lot. And so I've extended her oil changes to the maximum allowable on her owner's manual because she doesn't have a lot of heat cycles. She gets the car warm when she leaves town. She's driving 65, 70 miles an hour all the way up all those hills, and she gets here. So she goes 93 miles on one heat cycle. Many of you, it would take days and weeks to go do that kind of a heat cycle because many of you just drive from home to work. That's not really a heat cycle unless you get all the way up to half to three quarters on your gauge. That's a heat cycle. So it's okay. It's not something your motor is going to throw in the towel because I don't have enough heat cycles. The heat cycle is just let's get it fully warmed up. And many of you just use your car for short jaunts. You should shorten your oil change intervals to the minimum allowed in your owner's manual. So if it says, I want you to change your oil at 7,500 and severe service, I want you to do it 5,000, then yours is a severe service. The severe service handles the extremes, the fast guys hauling lots of cows and horses all the way to mom and dad who just drive to church and to the neighbors to play cards. That's severe service. Both ends of the spectrum is what you find, what we find you should be doing. In reality, the difference between the edges is really not that big of a deal. Oftentimes, it's just mileage. So they say, under severe service, change your oil at 10,000. If it's not severe service, you can go to 12,000. Doesn't make any difference. On our family cars, we're all using synthetic oil, and I think most of us are at 10,000-mile intervals. You can go 12 and 15 on certain cars, but I'm not going to do that on my truck because I'm hauling tractors and I'm hauling trailers and I'm running loaded and I'm running up and down the mountain a lot, and so I'm going to change my oil a little bit sooner than I have to because it gives me comfort and because it's, you know, I do an oil analysis every once in a while. and the oil analysis gives me metal content, aluminum content, fuel content, and it gives me a complete analysis of what the oil has. I'm looking for growth, and if I don't see any growth, I'm really happy. So if I do an oil analysis at 10,000 miles, and then I change my oil and I do another one at 10,000 miles, as long as the numbers are the same, I'm happy. But if my chrome grows, I've got a problem I need to deal with. If my brass, or if all of a sudden I have antifreeze in my oil, those are the kinds of issues that an oil analysis will get you. And you can buy a little vial of vial that you can buy on the internet, and you can just take to your oil change facility and say, when you drain the drain plug, count to five as the oil comes out, then stick this in there and fill it up, and then put the lid on it for me. So you don't want the first oil that comes out of the drain plug hole. You want it to the count of 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, and then grab your oil sample. Because the oil at the very bottom of the pan is going to be the most contaminated, and we don't want you to think that that's what you really have. We're going to let some of that oil out before we do that. We have a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Nick.
Nick, good morning. How can I help you?
How are you doing, Mark? I got a 21 Colorado 2.8 Duramax diesel. Should I follow the plug changes on that, what it says in the manual?
What are you talking about, a plug?
Well, they're glow plugs, right?
Oh, no, you don't do that. I would not do glow plugs until I had one go bad, then I'd do them all.
Okay, so as long as it's running great and everything, just go for it.
Glow plug only assists you in getting it started. We're not using the glow plugs. We just want to heat the cylinder up. When you turn the key on, we want to heat the cylinder up with the glow plugs. It's kind of like these little arc welders in there, and they heat up the air, and then when we squirt fuel in there, it starts up. That's all the glow plug's for. It doesn't come on after you go down the highway. The glow plug is only that circuit's only operational when you start your car. And in Phoenix, many times it's not even operational because you wake up in the morning and it's 60 degrees outside.
Okay.
And it's not working. So I would only, if I had a glow plug issue and they say, hey, number four glow plug's bad, I would say, would you bid all of them for me? And I'd do that.
Yeah. And will that throw a check engine light?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, it will. Now, it may it depends on the year, make, and model, but sometimes it'll throw a check engine light, but it won't be able to tell you which glow plug it is, so you'll have to test them all, and that's okay, too. But some of the newer model cars, it knows exactly which cylinder it is. So there is going to be some minor changes, but yes, we know how to do that. I mean, when I say we, our industry knows how to do that.
Okay. Good enough. Thanks a lot. You have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Glow plugs, folks, with a diesel, especially in a cold environment, and I'm saying cold like 30 degrees, but, I mean, there's diesels out there in the north that are at 20 below zero that they have to start up. When you turn the key on, we go into glow plug circuit, and there's these little glow plugs that are plugged into the cylinder, just like spark plugs, and they glow bright red. And there's a timer on them, and the computer controls how long they're on, and what we're doing is we're heating up that cylinder good. So then when we hit the key, that diesel engine will start. It'll blow a little black smoke, maybe even a little white smoke at the very beginning, but it'll start. If you don't have the glow plugs in and you're not using them appropriately, then you're probably going to have to crank it a little while. In Arizona, even in Flagstaff this morning, it was 22 degrees up here. I'm in Payson. I'm outside Payson. It was 22 degrees. I wouldn't have turned my key on and waited till the glow plug light go out. I don't. I just start it up and it starts. The glow plugs, they come on pretty hard and they come on pretty hot, and that's all you need. But if you have a problem, almost always the check engine light will come on and the code will be related to glow plugs. And then what we do is we just take a temperature gun and we cycle the key on and we temperature gun all the glow plugs that are hanging halfway out of the head, and we can tell which one isn't hot. And so it's not that big of a deal. Sometimes we have to take them out to determine which one is bad. Sometimes we can't, you know, it's not that easy sometimes, but sometimes you can just use a temperature gun and figure out which glow plug is. And you can hit the head, the cylinder head above the glow plug with your gun, and if the cylinders are all warm and you haven't started the engine yet, all you did is turn the key to the on position, turn it off, turn the key to the on position. You do that two or three times, and you gun the cylinder head, boom, if they're all warm, you're home free. So you can use that kind of temperature gun for that kind of stuff. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Blackwell Automotive is a good shop. He's up at 40th and Greenway. Tom and I have been best friends, and we're both ornery old cusses. And he has a his shop is divided into two kind of separate business. He has vintage car stuff over here, and on the other half of the shop, he has mother, father, daughter, son-in-law kind of cars, the family cars. So we have the same thing at our facility. We do the hot rods, we do the old cars and the vintage cars, and so does he. He's way up at 40th Street and Greenway. He does a good job on vintage, but I was talking to him the other day, and he's like 6 months out on vintage appointments. So he has quite a flow of vintage cars, but he's also doing fancy stuff like he's putting superchargers on your 427 Chevy in your old Chevy pickup truck. So those kinds of things is what he does, but when it comes to changing oil and filters and doing check engine lights and air conditioning repairs and water pump repairs and radio, he can do all that as well on new and old. That's Blackwell Automotive at 40th Street and Greenway. The lines, they're wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You've got five lines, and if you call now, then you'll probably get one, and we'll be right back after this. And I want to just add one more thing on the glow plug issue on your diesels. My son just called me and he says, Dad, do you really wait for the glow plug? And I said, no. And he goes, neither do I, and I don't know anybody who does. If you can get into your diesel, and you should be able to if your vehicle's 20 years old within the last 20 years, just stick the key in it, hit it, and go. If you're in Alaska and you're 40 below zero, it might be different. But for Arizona, he's right. I never wait for the glow plug light. I never wait for the glow plugs. I stick my key in just like it's a gas motor, and I hit the key, and boom, it starts. So we had a conversation about glow plugs and the diesels, but both of us agree it's not really an issue with respect to Phoenix and Arizona. Let's go to Richard. Richard, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. Love your show. Long-time listener. You're really great.
Thank you.
My issue is interesting. We have a 2020 Civic. It's a wonderful car. It just got 25,000 miles on it, and the first 24,500 miles, you start it up, it runs fine. I mean, everything's good about it, and there's no smell of exhaust. We had the 25,000 or 30,000 mile, whatever it is, service, and now you go out, you start the car, and you can smells like raw gasoline. And I'm wondering what do you think might have changed? Because it wasn't like that up until then.
You know, I got a couple of thoughts about this. I know that your Civic has oxygen sensors and it talks to the computer. And I know the computer is monitoring the amount of air and fuel in each one of the cylinders. The oxygen sensor and the computer will do that. It has the ability to trim out cylinder number 3. It has the ability to do a variety of different things because there's too much exhaust or too much fuel and not enough air in this particular cylinder or whatever. So I don't know that I'd be real worried about it. Here's what I'd watch for. I'd watch for a rotten egg smell, and number 2, or a check engine light. In the absence of a rotten egg smell or a check engine light, I don't think that I would spend any money chasing this at all.
The only reason to chase it is kind of like the intro to your show. I got a wife, and she really detests that smell and wants me to do something about it.
Okay. And I wonder, you know, I remember one time where there was a situation where the husband was a policeman, and he'd pull into the driveway, and he was on the radio. So he would sit there and let it idle for a while, and then he'd shut it off. And then there was this rotten egg smell afterwards, and I think it had a lot to do with him sitting there at idle, talking and yakking on the phone. And don't you say that I said that about your wife. But at the same time, when we got him to just shut the car off, and just turn the key back to the on position to continue his, you know, whatever, it fixed it. So I guess I would ask.
That's worth trying. Now, I understand that the problem occurs when it first starts, though, in our situation.
Okay. And the only thing I can think of is if the coolant sensor was out of whack, she would complain about fuel economy, a loss of fuel economy, and she would have the rotten egg smell virtually 50% of the time. So in the absence of the rotten smell, 50% of the time, whether she's idling, whether she's starting, whether she's running down the freeway, whether she's sitting at the McDonald's drive-thru, I don't care. But in the absence of those kinds of things, I'm not quite sure I get too involved in this. And I'll tell you what you could do if you wanted to. You could run it through a quick emissions test. They're going to have to pay for it. But if you pass the emissions test, then this is not a problem. This is not a problem.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Appreciate that.
Thank you. You bet. Michael, you're up next. How can I help you, Michael?
Yes, I have a 2000 Buick Century with 135,000 miles on it. And yesterday I went to a store and came out, and I went to turn the key on it. The ignition switch wouldn't turn the key, and after about 30 times, it finally turned, and I was very relieved, and I was wondering, if that ever happens again, do you know any tricks to get it to turn? Then I will drive it to a shop after that.
Well, I'm going to, is it possible that when you pulled into the steering, or when you turned a hard right turn and you parked, you held the steering wheel and you turned the key off and you kind of locked the steering wheel with the tires still turned?
No, I pretty much drove straight in.
Okay. Well, then, with that kind of miles and the fact that your car is that old, I would have a new ignition switch and key put in it.
Really?
I think you're going to be in trouble, and there's no fancy way to get it out. When the tumblers fall out, that car's getting towed.
Yes, that's right.
And so there's no way around it. If you've already had a problem and you had to wiggle the key around, and if you look at the key and it's worn out real good, and you look at the mouth of the ignition switch and it's worn out real good, it's no big deal. We're gonna take the steering wheel off. We're gonna take a couple of screws out. We're gonna slide out the ignition switch. We're gonna put a new one in. We're gonna give you two new keys, and you're gonna be on your way, and you're only gonna owe us $1,000.
That'll be about $200, what I was quoted to my friend.
I'm just teasing you.
I was wondering, can you get in and replace the digital odometer plate when he's in there doing that?
No, one has nothing to do with the other.
Oh.
If you want to replace the if you got a problem with your digital dash, call Dick Speedo and Tack in Tempe. Dick's Speedo and Tack. He's the one that everybody sends those cars to.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, you betcha. Good luck to you. Bill, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, sir. I have a 2007 Silverado half ton, and I'm not sure if my PCM is going senile. I have a long-standing TPMS light tire pressure, but I'm pretty sure that the sensors in the tires are probably OEM. So I just kind of let that go. But now I'm getting an intermittent battery charging system warning light, but the gauge shows 14.5 volts.
Okay. Well, there's a whole lot more to it than just your gauge. So, you've got a couple of things here. If you have an engine code, that needs to be dealt with, and that's going to be a yellow light. Is your alternator a red light or a yellow light?
The battery comes up as a red light, but it'll turn itself right off after about a couple of seconds or if I hit a bump.
Okay. Well, an electrical system test at most places is $50, give or take $25. And they're going to check the battery, the alternator, the regulator, the starter draw. They're going to check the belt, and then they're going to full field the alternator to see if it can turn itself inside out and give us a big time amp draw. And then they're going to bring it back down to regular. And so we all know, us gray haired guys know those numbers by heart. And so if it's 50, I don't care if it's a Honda, Toyota, Hyundai, if it's a Mercedes Benz, I don't care. The numbers are all the same. And so maybe you just have an electrical, but I am. How long has it been since they had an alternator? Because the symptoms you have cannot be caused by a belt. They can't be caused by a battery. The symptoms you have are caused by the alternator. So at the very worst,
that's the only thing in the charging system that I have yet to replace. The belt is new. The CERT belt is new. The battery is about 12 months old, and I don't go with cheap batteries, so it's a good quality battery. But the alternator I don't believe it's OEM. That would be amazing for the age of the vehicle. But I do know I've had the truck for 3.5 years, and I've never touched it.
Okay. And there's no such thing as OEM, because I can still buy an alternator in a Delco box, and I can buy it in 20 other different boxes. It's exactly the same alternator. It's made by the exact same factory, blah, 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 blah. So I don't care if it's OEM or not. I think what I would do is I would hook up my electronics to it, and I'd be watching the diode pattern, I'd be watching the voltage, and I'd be watching the amperage. And then I'd take a hammer and hit that SOB a couple of times and see if anything changes. And if all kinds of things change, then I would replace the alternator. That's what I would do.
Okay. All righty. Okay. Well, that sounds good. I appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
All right. You bet. You bet. Jim, I'm going to have time for your questions. And Laszlo, you stay there. But I can take your question, but I'm going to take a break and then come back and answer you. So, Jim, can we do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Go.
Well, I just wanted real quickly that the gentleman called earlier about a four-cylinder. I've got a 2000 Toyota RAV with 110,000 miles on it, and it was 8 years we lived in Wisconsin, and it's been through blizzards and ice storms, and it's 22 years old. I think I've spent over that 22 years $7,000 for repairs on it, maintenance. And if he wants to go with a four-cylinder, you can't beat this RAV. I love it so much. Okay. My question is, in the last 5 years, I get this whoop, 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 and I take it in, and they say it's brake dust. And they clean it off, and everything is fine. What causes the brakes to retain that dust? Because doesn't most cars, it blows it out, or what?
It depends on how fast you're going, and the answer is yes, and rain and water. I mean, if you want to, you can just, you know, every once in a while just put it in the driveway and get your garden hose and spray off through the wheels and clean that stuff up. It's probably more likely than the pads that were last put in. Sometimes one pad works good, and sometimes it doesn't work on other cars. It's not uncommon for once a month of us to change the pads from one brand to another because of brake dust, and we'll be back right after this. Okay, here's the deal. 21 callers is my record show, and Gil just reminded me that we're at 14. So there's lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. We're going to shoot for 22 callers this show for 2 hours, and right now we're at 14. We're going to take Laszlo in just a second. Kurt's Auto Repair is a great shop. He does both gas and diesel. He has great technicians. Kurt is a taskmaster. He knows right from wrong. They know he knows right from wrong, but he's a great guy, and when you meet him or Eric, you'll understand why Mark Salem is so excited to have him as part of their best car repair shops. That's Kurtz Automotive, I-17 and Bell Road, northeast corner, Kurtz Automotive. Laszlo, let's go to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. How are you, Mark? Mark, I have a 221 RAV 4 LE hybrid. And then I have an issue with, first of all, I'm 6 foot tall. And then what happened is to get into the passenger side, the seat is not adjustable. And I would like to solve the problem because I always go backwards, you know, to get in my butt first and then get in the seat. It drives me crazy. And then because my wife, she drives most of the time. What would you suggest? Does, if I would change, I have heard that they do have some, limited edition adjustable seat comes with it. But well, what would you suggest? What should I do?
Well, you should make friends with somebody at a wrecking yard and call a couple of wrecking yards and just say, here is the vehicle I have, and I'm interested in a passenger seat. And I don't care what color it is, because you're only going to use the base of it anyway. But would you look in your paperwork and determine whether or not my car has two different kinds of seat? Does it have a base that allows the seat to move forward and backward? Or does it also have one where the seat is stationary? Now, you can also ask your car repair garage to look at it, because many of us old guys go, no problem, we're just going to build a couple of platforms and we're going to move the seat back a couple inches for you and just leave it there. So we can bolt the platform. We can build a platform, bolt it to with the existing infrastructure, and all we're going to do is move the seat back a couple of inches. So you might do both of those things, but try the wrecking yard first, and they'll have the answer to the question, do they make an adjustable seat for your car? Okay? All righty. Thank you, Laszlo. Good luck to you.
You don't have time for me? She has a problem seeing, and we don't have a fog light. It did not come with the vehicle. If I would have them to install aftermarket fog lights, would that make any difference so she can see better? Because it was 10 foot or so from the front of the vehicle, we have a blind spot. And then that's what she's concerned. We have problems with that.
Okay. On the fog lights, I can tell you that there isn't, there's lots of shops that are capable of hooking up the fog lights and wiring them into the low beam circuit. And then if you put adjustables in there, then you can adjust them up or down to make your wife happy. But there is an area in front of the car, including my truck, there's 6 to 10 feet directly in front of my truck that I can't see because of the hood. Yep. So it doesn't make any difference how many fog lights I have underneath there. But that's it, Laszlo. You can have somebody install 2 floodlights or 2 fog lights underneath the front or in the front area of the car and hook them into the low beams, wire them into the low beams. So when you turn on the low beams, you get those floodlights. Yes, you can have that done. Okay?
Great. Merry Christmas to you. Thank you, Mark.
Okay, thank you, Laszlo, and Merry Christmas to you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, we got anybody in the wings? Oh, the lines are wide open, so if you'd like to give us a call. The VIN number on your car puts it in a section of kind of cars, but the guys that really know and have the books related to your car are the guys at the wrecking yards. Because they'll ask you your VIN, and they'll look it up by VIN, but they also understand that different interiors have different seats and different packages, and some of them have airbags in the seats, and some of them don't have airbags in the seat. Because when you call a wrecking yard and you need a specific part, they're going to ask you lots of questions. So as far as Laszlo's concerned, to find a seat that might be movable, that might have the same mounts, it's highly unlikely that the mount that's on there only fits one seat, especially if there's more than one option. There's going to be a couple of different seats that fit on that platform, and probably one of them moves. I find it ironic that it doesn't move because, frankly, I haven't seen a car that didn't have a passenger side seat that wasn't capable of moving forward or backward. But, Laszlo, if you're still listening, take it to your repair shop and ask them to look and make sure that you're right. Because it is entirely possible that it is a movable seat, and perhaps the lever is hidden, or perhaps the lever's locked up, or perhaps the lever is stuck in a wide open position, or closed position, or somebody bent it, or somebody pushed on it too hard. There's all those possibilities. 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open. We have open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we're going to go to Luke. Luke, good morning. How can we help you today?
Morning. I just picked up a 2008 Chevy truck, 3500 HD with the gas engine, the 6.0, and it had a couple check engine lights on. One of them was for the oil pressure sender not reporting.
Okay.
I went ahead, instead of doing it myself, there was another one that I wanted help on. They said this was going to take 3 hours, and they were going to have to when I called them, they said it was going to take 3 hours, and they were going to have to remove the valve cover. When I just did a YouTube video, it was just, it kind of sucked. You had to reach far back there, but no removing of the valve cover. And I was like, you really do? He's like, yep, you two must be wrong. But then this has the coils on top of the valve covers, and there's no evidence that the valve cover was actually removed. It just reached back there. Should I make an issue of this with the shop, or it was a flat charge of 3 hours. Any shop would have just did the same charge.
Well, I don't like being involved in these kinds of things because they're so stupid and ugly, and there's no and inevitably I end up in the middle of the storm. But the question in a nutshell is where's the oil pressure switch on my truck? Isn't that the question?
Pretty much.
Yeah, but, that's it. So just take it to another shop and say, point to the oil pressure switch for me, please. That's all. Take it to another shop and point. If they charged you 3 hours to get the one at the back of the motor, because it could be both places. It could be both places. So if it's at the back of the motor 3 hours, if it's the back of the motor, I'm talking now. If it's at the back of the motor, 3 hours is a stretch. I'd be really mad at my staff. If it was underneath the valve cover and that's what the book time said was 3 hours, then I'd be okay. But if it was underneath the valve cover at 1.2 hours and they charged you 3 hours, I'd be upset. That's my answer to your dilemma. You've got a dilemma. You're concerned about the 3 hours and where the position. Answer the questions first. One, where is it at? And two, call around to a couple other shops and ask them what they're going to charge you labor with respect to replacing the oil pressure switch. I can't answer your question without more information, and you can't give me the information. So got to move on. But anyway, good luck to you. Good luck to you, Luke. Harold, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I have a 2009 Mercury Grand Marquis, 70,000 miles, beautiful condition, well-maintained. There's not a scratch on it. I plan to be selling this car in the next month or two. How do I go about getting a accurate value for it? It's an old car, but it's in beautiful condition.
Just go to KellyBlueBook.com.
Will they go back that far in time?
Yes, they make two different books, and they do older ones and newer ones. Yeah, yes, they do. I mean, I just Google Blue Book value of my car, of my, what'd you say it was, an 09? 2009 Blue Book value. Just Google that string of words and you'll find plenty of places that have access to the information that you need. And then it might ask you the last six digits of the VIN or something like that. And you give them that. And then it says, does it have air conditioning? Add this, click this, click this. If it doesn't have this, then don't click this. And then you'll get a fair market Blue Book value. You'll get a high and a low, and then you can be anywhere you want. You can actually be higher than high if all of your maintenance records are in a three ring notebook and you've got them since day one. That old guys love that kind of stuff, so that brings a premium, but not a premium of $500. That brings a premium of $75 to $100. So the answer is you can do that. It just has to be done on the internet. I'm not familiar with people that have those kinds of books.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, good luck to you, Vernon. You're up next. How can I help you?
I have two questions on two different vehicles. Number one, is there a place in town that can do an engine oil analysis?
Engine oil analysis?
Yes.
And everybody sends it out. There's probably one here in town, and you can just do Phoenix, Arizona lab engine oil analysis, and there's probably one here in town that you could use. Most of us just send them out because it's really cheap that way. and in my opinion, the local shops typically handle the really big equipment, and their tests are a little bit more detailed than I need, and I find it really convenient for us to just order the sample. Otherwise, you buy the privilege of giving them an oil. They send you a vial. You give directions on how to provide the sample, and then you send it back to them, and then they give you an oil analysis. That's what I would do. And there isn't a quick lube shop in town that doesn't have an oil analysis address or email or website, because we all use them. So you just call a couple of shops, and hopefully they'll share that with you.
Okay. On my other car, I have a 56 T-Bird. Do you know anybody in the Northwest area that can work on old cars?
Well, I mean, it doesn't take any talent to work on old cars. It just takes age. anybody who's in their late 40s, 50s, and 60s was around working on cars when that was. The fundamentals of your cars, your brakes, your cooling system, your alternator, your generator, your air conditioning is the same as it is today. So you, unless of course you're chasing a problem where every time I honk the horn, the trunk latch pops open, that's probably something that you're going to need somebody that's going to be familiar with that process and that circuit. But when it comes to dialing in the carburetor and advancing or retarding the timing or doing or working on a cooling system problems, it's no different than anything else out there. Do you have a shop that you presently like right now?
Not really. I'm having trouble finding a shop that will work on the car.
All right. Yeah, but, well, most guys are not going to want to work at it when it's presented that way. I don't want you to come in and then ask for the qualifications of the technician who I've put in front of you, and you need to make sure that he's been certified in your particular 66 Thunderbird. That's just not something I need to deal with. But what part of town do you live in? Give me major cross streets.
Bell Road and Grand Avenue.
Bell and Grand. The closest one of that I know that can handle your car, I'm 100% sure, is Larry Harker's Automotive at 38th Avenue and Indian School. That's as close as I can get to you. Bob and Ellen own Larry Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob's an old-time drag racer just like I am. He can work on your car without looking up the specifications for dwell and timing. He can do anything to your carburetor. He can do anything to your cooling system. And he can do all the newer model cars as well. So that's the place that's closest to where you're at, Larry Harker's Auto. He's been in the business since 1967. And the other day he fixed a BMW that nobody else could fix in town. And he fixed it. And there's been time I send him old cars and they say, I swear he put a new engine in there. But those of us old guys, we know how to take the old cars and put the engine performance on the edge of a proverbial razor blade. We know how to do that. And it has to do with timing and fuel delivery, and it has to do with vacuum advance and mechanical advance and all that kind of stuff. But to answer your question, I'm going to turn you over to Larry Harker's Automotive at 38th Avenue and Indian School, and I would call them and ask them if you could bring the car by and have them look at it. But that would be the place that I would send you to. Anyway, 602-508-0960. Gil, do we have anybody else?
Yes, say hello to Cash.
Cash, how are you? What can I do for you?
I'm doing pretty good, Mark. I'm working on a 1952 Jallet Jupiter, and it has a brake set up. This is drum brakes, front and rear, and it has a master cylinder that's a pull master cylinder instead of a push-in.
Okay.
And it doesn't build much pressure, and I haven't been able to find anyone that could rebuild it. Everyone, when they see it, they go, it's too far gone. So I'm going to change out the master cylinder, and it has a 7/8 bore. And I want to know if I went to a 3/4 bore, how much more pressure that would give me at the wheel cylinders.
I want to tell you something. None of us are going to want a part of this because you're redesigning the car. And it appears that you want us to make a change on the car because you can't do A. And in reality, and then we're going to live with that brake system for the rest of our lives. And anything that happens to that brake system, sometimes the owner blames it on the guys who did the work in 1968 or in 10 years ago. May I suggest to you, go to Rock Auto. Go to Rock Auto on the internet. They'll
right.
find a master cylinder for you.
They haven't been able to. they only made 700 of these cars.
Well, I don't care. I'm sorry. I am very familiar with Rock Auto. We might buy $5,000 worth of parts a day. And I'm not going to let you use my organization. I mean, I can't open that door because I'd spend the rest of my life. I'm giving you the best advice I can. You say they can't find it. I find that incredibly tough to understand, but that's the best I can do. That's the best I can do. I'm quite sure my parts department could find that master cylinder. I don't care if 20 master cylinders were made or 20 cars were made of that. I'm quite sure they can. It's a matter of VIN and it's a matter of who you go to. And I've given you the best advice I can. I have to turn you over to Rock Auto, but if you're not happy there, then maybe call a couple of Napa stores in town, ask for the Grizzly guy there that's been around for a long time, and see if he can do some research for you. But most of us have the same computer access, and most of us, I just can't believe that that's that hard to find. But to change the bore, I don't want to send you to a shop because we're all scared to death that the car ultimately ends up in a car crash. There's no skid marks to the point of impact. People are dying, and then all of a sudden, the shop that worked on that last and modified the brake system is in the food chain. And if he happens to have a $1 million policy, he's first in line for payment. And all of us old guys are smarter than that. We're not going to put our shops in that position. So the modifications, I don't want any part of. But to find that one, I've given you the best advice I can. Good luck to you, Cash. Anyway, 602, let me do this. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. So if you didn't get in, you're certainly welcome to email me a question. If you would be so kind as to include a phone number, perhaps your cell phone number, and here's why. A lot of times, I would rather talk to you. So what I do is I call from my blocked cell phone. So I usually, I send you back an email and I say, can I call you tomorrow, somewhere around lunchtime, and I'm going to call from a blocked number. And hopefully I already have your number. If not, I'll say, can I have your number? What phone do you want me to call? And then I'll just put it in my phone as a trigger at 11:55. Hey, you need to call Fred. And I'll call you. We'll have a short conversation. It can't be something that goes on for 20 minutes. I have too many of these to do. But you can also send me your question on email, and I'll answer you on email, and I don't have anybody ghostwrite for me. I write it myself. And so sometimes I have to ask you questions like, why is this a concern? What's the symptoms you're chasing? Is the fluid clean? Does the pedal slowly go to the floor? Is the pedal rock hard and it takes 2 feet to apply the brake pedal? Those are the kinds of questions that help me determine what it is that you're faced with. So, again, mark@marksalem.com. Salem's spelled like the cigarette, and Mark is spelled with a K. MarkSalem.com. And I'm happy to help you, and I've been doing this in the Valley since 1988. I've been on radio since 1988. I've been with KKNT for the last 10 years. And so I fielded lots of calls, and there are times I can give you information that helps you. Very few times can I just not help you. And typically it's because it's just outside the area of what we do for a living, which is work on cars. So I'm an ASE Master Tech. I've passed all 8 tests. And if you pass all 8 automotive tests, then you are a Master Tech. And I've been a Master Tech since 1991. And so I've testified in court as an expert, both for the state of Arizona, for numerous plaintiffs' law firms, defense law firms, insurance companies. So I have a background that's quite extensive, and I'm pretty good on working on cars. And more important, I think one of the skills I have is asking the right question. Is in that conversation, does the pedal slowly go to the floor? Is it rock hard? And as I ask those questions, there's 2 answers. Actually, there's 3. Yes, no, and I don't know. Now, the women know how to use the words, I don't know, but the guys don't. And so it's always funny to us old guys that happens. Nevertheless, mark@marksalem.com. I'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT.